I'm Erin.
I'm Sarah.
I'm Megan.
And this is the Tribbles and Transporters podcast.
So I want to wish both of you luck on this one.
Yeah, I have no clue whatsoever.
Is it from Deep Space Nine? No.
I want to say it sounds like it's from an episode of something.
Okay.
Rather than a movie.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it would be original series. It would be one of the later series. I almost want to say it would even be from something newer like Enterprise, which of course would mean I don't really know the music of Enterprise, so that right. would be a problem.
See, I was thinking more Next Generation.
Yeah.
It wasn't Deep Space Nine. But I don't, like, when it first started playing, I was like, it like triggered that I knew this. But then the longer it played, the more I was like, no, I don't think I do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I had a very similar feeling of, oh, this sounds familiar, except
yeah.
now it doesn't.
Yeah. Like, maybe something from Encounter at Farpoint?
Why do you always think it's from Encounter at Farpoint?
Because it sounds like it is. It's something that I actually saw recently, too. So, like, in the last few weeks. Mm. Outside of that, I haven't been really watching a whole lot of Star Trek except for stuff for this podcast.
It's not from Encounter at Farpoint.
I did binge a couple of the movies.
One of these days, I am going to do something from that, and you're not probably not going to get it.
That's probably very true. Very true.
I almost want to say it sounds like it would have fit in the Picard episodes we watched, but I don't. Trying to think.
Wait,
if it
is this a
could
theme?
Have.
Like when you did the Romulan theme? Is it one of?
It's not
like
it's,
that.
No, okay. It's not a theme. I'll give you guys a hint. Maybe I would not be familiar with it,
which probably means. It's either in Enterprise or Voyager. And if it's in Voyager, then it's not a piece that stood out to me at all.
Yeah, I don't think it would be.
Yeah, it's such a... it doesn't have a real strong theme to it or something that would jump out and really stick in my brain.
It's very standard Star Trek. Music.
Yeah. Well, I'd say it definitely could fit in Voyager. So was it in Voyager?
It was in Voyager.
All right.
I will not make you drill down to the episode and scene.
Yeah. We'd be here forever.
That would be the entire episode of this podcast. Yeah. we'd be trying to figure out which episode of Voyager this came from. It is from Voyager. It's from an episode called Heroes and Demons.
Okay, it sounds familiar.
The name of the track is Armageddon.
I was going to say, I remember that episode title, but I don't remember that episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I have not seen that episode. That's not one that we watched, correct?
No, that is not one that we watched.
Well, I'm sure we'll get to it one of these days.
Yeah.
Out of the 800 episodes of Star Trek we have to watch.
Yeah, it'll be chosen randomly, you know, about 3 years from now.
Probably.
Yeah. Yeah.
We might have to come up with an alternate plan to get through all of this stuff. I don't know. We'll see how this goes.
Yeah.
But we're going to talk about Picard's episode 7 and 8 today. I don't know. Let's just do the go straight to the what did you think part of this.
Well, what do you think?
All right, who wants to go first? Okay, actually, Aaron.
I was about to say, I actually want you to go first.
You want me to go first?
Yes, I do. I want you to go first.
Why? I feel like I'm being set up here.
No. I know, because I know you were looking so forward to the first episode of these two that we're talking about. So I'm curious. I want to know what your feedback is.
Yeah. So episode 7 of Penthe was pretty much the only episode I was looking forward to in this whole thing, because a guy got my Riker and Troi. You know.
Yeah.
So, I got my Imzadi. I got my Riker and Troi. You know, they have kids, and you know, they're living kind of an unexpected lifestyle. I wasn't expecting quite, you know, that setup, but you know, it was cool. You know, they had a very nice little family life, and the only thing I didn't like was that they killed off one of their kids. But other than that,
really strange way of putting that.
Well, I mean, this what happened. Yeah. I mean,
the writers, not the Rikers.
Well, I think people understand what I'm saying. Yeah, so I really enjoyed that part of that episode. The rest of it, you know, it's my relationship to this show is a very complicated one, because I like little, you know, things here or there that it throws in that feels kind of like legacy Star Trek, and then the rest of it, I just, it's not looking good. We're on episode 8 now, and we're almost done with this, and so I'm still not really digging it, you know. So, but we'll talk more about it, I guess, later. You guys go.
I will say, for me, like Sarah, I loved episode 7. Like I've seen the whole first season. So, like outside of the last episode, this episode is the one that I had all the feels in watching. Like I cried when I saw to see Deanna Troi and Will Riker on screen and greeting Picard. It was just very nostalgic, and it was great to see and learn of what had happened with the Rikers, or the Troi Rikers, whatever, from the last time that we saw them in a movie, to what had happened with them in the last 20 years, to see that, you know, they had two children, and to see their interaction with each other and with Picard and with Soji. And then for me, the next episode, you know, I'm all about story. So like, this is just continuing to progress the storyline to figure out, you know, more of what's been happening, why things have been happening the way that they have from all these different angles. And it was a great character episode, the next one, for Rios to get more of his backstory, and what happened with him and his captain and why he left Starfleet. So as far as that, like, I loved these episodes.
Yeah, I would go ahead and agree with you on pretty much all of that, because this is where I feel this series, for me, kind of clicked in and just sort of settled into, okay, now I can kind of vibe with these characters a little bit more. Again, loved everything with Riker and Troi and their whole backstory. I thought it played out really well, the way they just gave you the tidbits of the story and then let you put some things together, rather than just giving you like a, here's a history of what just happened montage.
Yeah.
So I liked that. I thought some of the stuff with Soji trying to figure things out came across a little bit more abrupt, but I think that was because it was sort of juxtaposed with these familiar characters that we already have a backstory and everything, and then Soji is just this very sharp little tidbits and, you know, a whole lot of anger. And then in the next episode, I definitely liked the way, yeah, we found out more about Rios, and he's becoming less of just this, oh yeah, stereotypical, you know, broody guy who's, you know, existential and everything. And you find out where that comes from. So it's not just, you know, that's the type of character we decided he should be. And there were lots of really cool parts in there. I loved all the stuff with the multiple holograms and Rafi, yes, figuring everything out.
Yeah.
So there were parts of that that I really, really loved. And I thought it was interesting after we watched, particularly Nepenthe, my mom, who she loves, I think she's more like Sarah. She just loves the characters and that development and everything like that. And so for her, she hasn't really totally enjoyed most of the series. And then that episode, she was like, that was my kind of episode. So she very much liked that one.
Yeah. Well, it's look, here's my rule with liking Star Trek episodes. Mm-hmm. Even on TNG, when they're like the crappiest episodes ever, if there's a Riker and Troi moment, that like rectifies the whole thing for me. Like I'm totally cool with it. As long as if there's a Riker and Troi like romantic or any, if they're even, if it's just like them flirting for 5 seconds, that like rescues the whole episode for me. Like yeah. I don't hate it like everybody else. That's kind of my rule with this. So that's kind of the way it was with Nepenthe, was that, and here's the other thing. I'm an emetophobe. And if you don't know what that is, that's somebody who has a phobia of vomiting. That part did not go down well with me. That was another strike against this episode. But I'm totally on board for all the Riker and Troi stuff. It really was, it was, I didn't cry, you know, but it was very, you got the sense that no time had passed really between these characters.
Yeah.
And I think that's a tribute to the closeness of the TNG cast, you know, because it's well known that they are the closest, you know, cast of Star Trek, and they still hang out all the time.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, they're family.
Yeah, exactly. And that came through in this episode in spades, I think. So that's why you have such great chemistry between these characters, even though they're set 20 years later. I thought that they were all very much in character. I thought Riker especially was the most in character out of all of them. He still sounded exactly like he did 30 years ago. You know, there was no change whatsoever in his voice and just the way he acted and everything. But he was a little looser, you know, not being on the starship in his uniform and stuff. So that was, he acted like what I would expect Will Riker to act like, you know, when he's not on duty and stuff like that. Troi was really good too. Marina brought Troy's original accent back a little bit. She had kind of gone Cockney in the movies, you know, she was like British Cockney, and she kind of lost that Troi accent, but she brought it back for this. And the only difference was her voice was a little bit deeper, but I'm used to hearing her Marina talk, you know, now, so it wasn't that jarring, but it was great. It was a bit of a role reversal with Riker and Picard in this too, you know, because Riker was kind of the one in charge and mentoring Picard versus the other way around, like it was on TNG. So that was kind of cool to see as well. And I loved their daughter. Mm-hmm. She was Lulu Wilson. I saw her in another movie called Ouija. It was a horror. It was some sort of horror.
Yeah, she, movie. I read a little bit on her, and she's been in a lot of those kind of. I think she was in Annabelle and stuff like that as well. So several different things like that.
She was. I reviewed that movie for one of my movie reviews out here in LA, and she was in it. So this was my second time seeing her on screen. She's a really good actor. She's a really good actress. I thought she was a really good mix of. She's got a lot of Riker in her, you can tell, you know. But she's got that empathy that Troi has too. So it was a good mix. And of course, we didn't see their son really, except for in photographs. We saw the baby photograph, but if you there is a special, like a 2 or 3 minute video special they did of the props that are in their house.
Oh, okay,
it's on CBS All Access. I think it's on YouTube as well, if you just look it up. But it had a lot of pictures of Thad as an older kid with Kestra. And even with Riker, like, so it was like family photos. Marina was not in them. They had some weird lady standing in for Marina because she was in London doing a play when they were shooting all of those pictures and stuff. But so it's kind of cool. You can kind of see what Thad looked like as like a 12, 13 year old ish kind of. It was a very good character study.
Yeah,
for sure. Like Megan said.
Yeah. And I have to say, one of my favorite scenes was when Soji and Deanna were talking in the garden, and we get that moment of Soji, I don't know if Picard told her that Deanna was a counselor, or if she just kind of picked up on that and just said, okay, you know, I can tell you're telling me all the things that I should be wanting to hear. And then you almost see Deanna like switch tactics. You know, like you visibly see it where she's like, okay, I just need to treat her a different way. And I just loved all that interaction there and how she was saying all the right things, but she also was dealing with Soji as her own being and allowing Soji to direct the conversation and all of that. So I really enjoyed that scene.
I loved like the reactions that of Deanna first seeing Picard, you know, walk up, and her reaction, her greeting of him, of more of the emotional counselor type mode of like, oh no, my friend's hurting, there's things going on that he doesn't want to talk about. And then he goes inside and greets Will Riker, who's, you know, the enthusiastic, you know, bear hug to see his friend and mentor, and gets flour all over Picard's back. I thought that was awesome. But his reaction of, you know, you're in trouble, and goes into like a red alert mode of locking down the house and the property and doing all these scans. And so there's the reactions to what the situation was really awesome. And then I also loved, like, neither one of them would let Picard get away with anything. That they were both, especially Deanna, was like really good at just like putting him in his place. Especially like after that scene that you mentioned with Soji. And she storms off and basically, you know, she starts this whole thing as like, ship's counselor, I would never say what I'm about to say, and just basically lets him have it for how he's been treating her.
Yeah.
And so, and even that when Picard and Riker are talking, when Riker's making the pizza outside of, look, I know you're not telling me anything, but let me guess. I'm fairly positive I have this right. And just throw it out there. Basically, like, I already know what's going on. You can confirm it or deny it, but let me lay it out. But ignorance of this is not going to help me.
Yeah.
So, I mean, just, it was just fun. And then to watch like Kestra's interactions with Soji, of all of her, the innocent questions of a child. To that, it's not, she's not asking questions to be annoying. She genuinely wants to learn about Soji, and that Soji's allowing all these questions to come at her and to answer and be as patient as she can be in a way that she would never be with the other adults around her. So I love that that was also part of that process for Soji, to allow her to sort of process the way that her entire world had been turned upside down.
Well, I mean, that's one reason why they killed off the writers killed off that was so that they could have that relationship with Soji, because Kestra was missing that sibling, and so Soji kind of came in and took that place sort of in a way, but also they reversed it because Kestra was then like the older, more experienced sibling, you know, teaching Soji, who was apparently only 3 years old. So it was kind of an interesting way that they handled that. I mean, they also killed off Thad because it was more interesting dramatically, I guess. That doesn't make me like it any better. Whatever.
Well, I mean, I did go to show like the broad stroke ban on the sense, like, had positive and extremely negative results. And the negative results is that people died from not having access to that technology.
I also feel like it gave anybody who hasn't seen Next Generation or hasn't seen much of it, it gave them a real emotional thing to connect with Riker and Troy on. You know, we connect with them immediately as soon as we see them, because we're so used to them being integral parts of the Star Trek universe. But, you know, if somebody's only seen, you know, maybe they've only seen Discovery and Picard, or they've only seen Enterprise and Picard, they don't have that established. So that might have been part of the impetus there as well.
You gotta think about poor Deanna. She's lost two sons now. She's gone through this twice.
Yeah.
And then her mom had the same... This is like a theme in the Troy households, is a kid has to die. Because we had that happen in The Child on TNG. We had it happen here. And then we had Kestra who died in TNG. Well, not in TNG, but the story was told in TNG of Kestra dying.
Yeah.
Deanna's sister Kestra, not their kid. So it's kind of like a theme with the Troys.
It's not a very good family trait.
It's not a family trait. It's kind of like a curse. Like the Kennedys are cursed. Mm. You know, those guys have somebody in the Kennedy family dies like once a decade at least. There's some tragedy that happens in the Kennedy family, and I feel like the Troys are like the Kennedy family of Beta Zed. Like there's always some sort of tragedy that's gonna befall them. So at least that seems to be the trend so far in Star Trek.
Yeah.
But honestly, that's death did not really detract that much from the enjoyment of this episode. I mean, it was still very enjoyable. So,
oh yeah,
I do have to say my heart sort of hurt like when Deanna said that she was not as brave as she used to be. Like it was that kind of like, oh man, like she's been through so much in the time that I've last seen her to make that kind of statement. And I totally understand. Like you have come to this planet, you came to this planet in the hopes of prolonging your son's life, and you've had a daughter, and now you only have one living child, and you're going to want to do everything you can to protect her. So yeah, it was like kind of like, oh man.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of people, a lot of fans wanted to still see them. I know a lot of people wanted to see the Titan, you know, because Riker was the captain of the Titan, and I knew that wasn't going to happen because it's been 20 freaking years, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, if he was still captain of the Titan 20 years later, something's wrong. So I never expected that. I did kind of, I mean, he is still an active reserve in Starfleet. I went into this really wanting them to still have ties to Starfleet in some way, and still be active service. There was a lot of speculation, well, are they just on shore leave? Are they actually retired? You know, all of this stuff. Because it was hard for me to kind of picture them outside of Starfleet. But now that I've sat with this for a long time, you know, it's not a big deal anymore to me. But, you know, I'm used to it. I don't know, like, I really want to see, like, the Star Trek Titan. Like, I really want to see what happened in the last 20 years. I want to see that part of their lives. That's just me, though, being a fan of Riker and Troy. You know, I would totally watch a series about that. But it's interesting to think about what kind of character, what they've been through in the last 20 years to make those character changes. I feel like, though, Riker's not as different as Deanna. He seems more willing to still be active in Starfleet. But he did say that, you know, it would take something really important to take him away from home. So he's a lot less career minded than he used to be, which is totally understandable. Yeah.
Yeah. I would love to go hang out at their house. That was like a beautiful home and a beautiful area. Like, I remember watching that going, man, I would love to live there. Like, just to have that area. Just, oh my gosh, that's just, I want to go.
Yeah. Yeah.
I thought it was interesting because we only see the wooded area and the house and the gardens around it. I kept forgetting that there were other people on that planet. And that,
oh, yeah.
Apparently there's towns and all this kind of stuff. So it almost felt more like this little hidden oasis. And then, oh, yeah, right. There are other people on the planet.
Well, Michael, you know, I told you guys Michael Chabon was doing like Instagram Q&A and stuff. And so the first one he did was an Impossible Box, I think. And then the second one he did was Nepenthe. And so he filled in a lot of the backstory that they didn't mention in this episode. But the town that they were living in was called Infinity Lake, which I think Kestra mentions in the show. And they homeschool Kestra. And Thad apparently got sick when he was like 10. And then, so they were, was it 10 or 12? He was either 10 or 12. I can't remember. And so Riker, no, he was 10. Riker was captain of the Titan for like 12 years because they had him like 2 years after they left the Enterprise or got married. And he was 15 when he died, okay. Which would have been like 3 years prior to this episode. And so Kestra would have been like 5 when they moved to Nepenthe. So she would have a lot less memory of the Titan and growing up on starships. But she seems very curious. Like, I could totally see her growing up to be in Starfleet if she chose to do that, because she's got that scientific curiosity. So, yeah, that was... I was trying to picture Riker and Troy as homeschool parents because that's a big part of Megan and my life.
Yes. Actually. Yep.
So how would it be to be homeschooled by Riker and Troy?
I wouldn't mind that, but I mean, yeah. I feel like the education of people in Star Trek is way more advanced than what I've ever done. No, yeah.
It's like all on a computer.
Fourth yeah. grade in calculus. So it's like, yeah, it's right. just way more advanced than what I understand, because that's not my, not yeah. that is area, especially it's not my gifting. But yeah, just as long as it works on a calculator, that's all I care.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it would be great. I mean, you know, it may be a little terrible too, because you've got a counselor mom that may flip into counseling mode. That's
an empath.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That just stop sensing me, mom.
Oh my God. I don't think I would have lasted very long doing that.
But I also feel like Riker's a great dad. Like, just oh, yeah, watching his really interactions. Good. And so, yeah, I think it would have been fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Jonathan Frakes is a very gregarious, like, warm person. So that really shines through Riker. And so Riker's always been good with kids, though. Like, even back on TNG, you know, he was very amiable towards the children. For the most part, except for that one episode where he had to like yell at those two boys for playing a trick on each other. But yeah, so he was always, I think, a good dad type. I think he'd be fun. He'd be a fun dad to have. Although I'd be terrified, though, if he got really mad. Because Riker mad is not something that you really want to contend with.
It's sort of like my dad. When my dad would get mad, he would get quiet. And so because he was not wanting to say how mad he, like, he didn't want to, like, explode on us. Like, so, like, when he got mad, you're like, oh, crap. It was that, oh, my goodness, he's quiet. I am in so much trouble. Because he would go away and then sort of calm down and then come back and, like, you know, that we would then get our punishment. Only once did I ever get punished while he was angry, and it wasn't my fault.
It wasn't.
Okay, and my brother got so much trouble after. So yeah, I can sort of, like, I see my dad a little bit in his interactions with his daughter. Just that the championing of your child and being there for them and all that stuff. So yeah, I enjoyed all of this.
And Michael Chabon also said that Kestra has like classes and stuff that she goes to in town. So they live close enough, I guess, to a town. I guess Infinity Lake, whatever. I guess they live out, like you, Megan, you, it's kind of like your house.
Yeah.
In proximity to Memphis, probably.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm. Like out in the country.
Yeah. It was a 30-minute drive to get from my house to Sarah's. So we lived, well, my mom still lives 30 minutes outside of Memphis. So it's okay. Far enough out in the country that, like, I like going, like, because I live in, you know, a major city in the United States, that it's one of those, like, I like going there. Like, I don't realize, you know, I live in Houston, and Houston's it's not like New York City where it's just super tall skyscrapers everywhere. It's just a very sprawling city that you just takes 2 hours to drive out of.
Yeah.
So that for me, like, when I, on the rare times that I do drive to Memphis to go see my family, like, it's once I get all the way out of Houston and its metro area and get out in the countryside, it's that kind of like a weight falls off that I didn't know I had. So I sort of feel like that's their house too, that that's a refuge for them, that so that they're enjoying life and not living in a city, but they're close enough to a city that they could have access to anything that they need.
It's also interesting, I kind of wonder if that house mirrors kind of the house that Riker grew up in Alaska, because you think of Alaska, you think of log homes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's 24th century, you know, in TNG, Riker talks about him cooking when he was a kid. Like, that's how he got into it, because his dad didn't cook or whatever. I don't know if they had a replicator, you know, in Alaska. They had one in their house here, even though Riker was cooking traditionally.
Yeah.
So I thought it was kind of cool that they had sort of this more rustic life, but it was still, like, technology everywhere as
yeah.
well.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it was neat to see the technology was basically hidden. So, you know, it looked like what we would consider familiar as a home right now. But then, you know, of course, Riker goes over and he puts the shields up and he's doing scans and all this kind of stuff. So clearly it's more than what meets the eye.
Well, you can see the replicator, though, in the kitchen.
Well, yes. But
other than that, though, yeah, it's very...
Yeah.
Yeah.
In general feel, it's something that we would be comfortable walking around in just today.
Yeah. Deanna really likes candles, too.
Yeah.
She loves candles. They're everywhere in that house. And they're everywhere also in, like, the movies. Like, if you watch Insurrection in the bathtub scene with Riker, candles everywhere.
Yep.
And Nemesis candles everywhere.
Oh,
yeah, she likes those.
It's the feminine touch.
Mm-hmm. It makes me wonder how Deanna, I guess she likes living in a log cabin out in the middle of nowhere, because I get the vibe that she's from a very different background on Beta Zed. Mm. Like an aristocratic, like, I mean, there are hints that the Troy family is really wealthy. You know, and she's from a more urban area in on Beta Zed. So I get the sense that her upbringing was very, very different to this type of lifestyle. So it's interesting. She seems very content with it. And she always kind of bucked the system with, you know, Beta Zed. So it's just, I expect it from Riker, but I wasn't sure how well Deanna would fit into it. But
yeah.
Yeah, she seems to have acclimated, so.
I will say, for the little bit of this episode that was not on Nepenthe, when they were back on when we were on the artifact with Hugh and with, I don't know what this character's name is, but she's the sister to Narek. I don't know
Narissa.
What her character name is.
Nobody knows what her name is.
Like, yeah.
Wait, who is her?
Narissa?
Narissa, yeah.
Narissa?
Okay, thank you. So, like, for her, like, it was shocking, and I don't know why it was shocking to me, because she's such a evil character that I think, and more so because she's just trying to accomplish her goal, but for her to have killed all of the ex-Borg drones in front of Hugh to try to get Hugh to talk, and then as his punishment, for him refusing to tell her where Picard and Soji disappeared to. And then at the end of the episode, for her to kill Hugh. Like, that was another blow for me, because I, you know, to have Hugh back as a longtime, you know, Star Trek Next Generation fan, and to see his interactions and what he's been accomplishing, like, that was just a shocking moment for me that Hugh dies. Trying to do the right thing.
Is it really that shocking on this show?
It was. It was for me.
Really?
Like, yeah, it was.
See, I had a funny response to that segment, because I watched these episodes at least a couple weeks or a week or so after they aired. And I had seen a tweet from Jonathan Del Arco, if I'm saying that correctly, the actor playing Hugh, where he said something about, yeah, you know, just so everybody knows, you know, the decisions made with Hugh, you know, I left them to the writers. I did what they wanted with the character and, you know, all of this stuff. So, but he didn't give any details. He just said, you know, I want everybody to know that that was the way they wanted it to go. So that's what we did. And, you know, I know some of you are upset, blah, blah, blah. So I was so afraid that they were going to have Hugh betray Picard. So the whole time I'm like holding my breath, like, oh, you know, I so don't want him to turn on him or accidentally give him away or anything like that. So it was a weird, I mean, I was terribly sad that they killed him because I was loving his character, but I was weirdly relieved that that was what he was talking about and not something else.
Yeah, I do have to say, like, following when this originally aired, the outcry that went out on Twitter over his death was like pretty great. Like, they were all like, he's Borg, just let's repair him, have a drone, you know, do something to him. That's an easy fix, don't say he's actually totally dead. So like, there's this huge campaign on social media to bring back Hugh for the next season, because they knew the rest of the season had already been shot and was done. So yeah, it's one of those things that, like, I'm really hoping that actually ends up happening, because I wasn't ready to have Hugh dead either. But I don't know what he would do, because there's no more Borg drones either.
Yeah.
Which is what happened in the next episode.
Yes.
So yeah, it was an interesting two episodes. I think it's been interesting the way that we've sort of broken these episodes up and how we're reviewing them, that they tend to go very well together. we're discussing these two episodes. So yeah, I thought it was interesting with the next episode of Broken Pieces, that part of the storyline picks back up with Seven of Nine showing up to help Elnor and rescue Elnor.
Mm-hmm.
And her decision to do that ultimately was to become the Borg Queen for that ship. So I thought she did an incredibly good job of portraying that struggle of, do I do this? Having been through having my humanity taken away from me, can I do that again? Can I take over these thousands of people who are just in stasis? And then can I give that power up? So I thought all of that was incredibly well done on her part.
Yeah. I did think the one thing I found a little anticlimactic with that was the whole, you know, they built it up and up and up to she's making this difficult decision. And then as soon as she connects to all of the drones, oh yeah, we'll just, you know, get rid of them by shooting them out an airlock. Yeah. And then that's, so that felt a little anticlimactic, although I understand why they did it, because that would be a little overpowered and it would be difficult for Nerissa to get out of that situation.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree. I liked the way there was that struggle back and forth, and then to see her connecting with the cube and then being able to use the cube itself and then relinquishing it was really cool and very well done.
Although I did have to say, like, from them opening up the airlocks and all those Borg drones being jettisoned into space, like, I had the thought, because I just watched a couple weeks ago, just watched First Contact again.
Mm-hmm.
And there's Borg drones out on the saucer or out on the deflector dish making modifications that have no type of suit on to protect them from space.
Right.
So they're just out there working. I was like, well, I mean, technically she's still connected to all those Borg drones. Like, they're not dead, if that's the same logic.
I think before. The implication was that they couldn't do anything because they were ejected into space, you know. Once you go into space with some momentum, you just keep going.
Yeah. But so, that could have been very easily fixed in the writing. Very easily fixed. You can just beam them all back. I mean, that could have been easily fixed, in my opinion. But yeah, I agree that they couldn't have it. Lends more drama to her for her not to have any physical help of those drones.
Yeah.
But it was interesting too to watch the cute before she became the queen, that for her to reactivate the ship, for the ship to repair itself. So that was interesting to watch. I don't think that's something that we've seen before to that level of degree that I remember in watching, you know, all the different Star Trek shows.
Yeah.
So it was like, well, okay, well, that's how that ship magically magically repairs itself, and not just these random pieces moving back into place through telekinesis or some kind of a weird thing. So yeah, so that was a fun moment for me, because like I like you, Aaron, you know, I enjoyed Voyager too, and enjoyed watching Jerry Ryan as 709 on there too. So to have these glimpses of her in this series is enjoyable for me.
There are some things that if you know Seven or are familiar with her storyline, there are things that will stand out more to you. But I do think they did a good job of making it so that you don't have to know those things in order for her character to make sense.
Yeah, I would agree. I did have to, like, you know, Aaron, you mentioned this earlier when giving your review of how you like the episodes. Like, I loved seeing the actor that plays Rios play all the different holograms that you learn are all parts of his personality for the ship. Like, I loved that interaction between those holograms, between the holograms and Rafi, with her trying to figure out what in the world is going on that has basically shut down Rios. So, like, I loved being able to see his acting range in that episode. I thought it was interesting the way that they did the holograms' eyes when they were accessing information. It's not something that I would have thought to do as a visual, that that's happening, but I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's something we've never seen before, because we've definitely seen holograms accessing, like, the computer. You know, the doctor on Voyager does all the time. He says, you know, such and such doctor in the past, you know, has this in my database, and here's what I'm going to do about it. So yeah, that was a neat detail they threw in there.
Well, and to have them all aware that they have part of this information, that they know they've had this information before, and now they don't. It reminded me a little bit of one of my grandmothers I had a grandmother that passed away from Alzheimer's. So I can remember her going through that of knowing that she knew something, but couldn't access the memory, but she knew it. So it was for me, because that was not a positive for her, but to see that more in a acted out in more of a positive light of like, yeah, I don't know. I know, but I don't know. Versus the frustration side of that more Rafi had, the frustration of trying to figure out what the world is going on. Versus these holograms.
Yeah. And it was really interesting to see that whole sequence of, again, just putting together these little pieces of a story rather than just having them lay out the story for us. I mean, you can argue whether that's good or bad. I mean, they could have just had, you know, Rafi gets one of the holograms to break into Rios's cabin, and, you know, she just makes him tell her the story. But I thought it was more fun, for sure, to have that whole sequence of her trying to figure all these things out. And it actually showed a lot of how Rafi's mind works as well, because we get to see how she's processing all of these little bits of information and putting them together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I liked her interactions too with Dr. Girardi on first sort of confronting her, but then flipping into that, okay, let's go take you over here and figure out what's going on with you.
Yeah.
let's come with me. Let's come on. We're going to go eat cake.
Yeah. Yeah. Although I totally related to the moment there where clearly us as viewers, we know that Rafi is offering Agnes, like, you know, whatever you need, you know, you want alcohol, you want drugs, I've got you covered. And then Agnes is just like, How about cake?
Yeah.
That's me. I'm the person that does not pick up on, you know, hey, do you want something a little stronger? Maybe on the set. I'm like, no, give me chocolate. And it just goes right over my head. Not that I've been in that situation, obviously, but just saying, I am the naive one usually.
I was going to say, I'm more the comfort eater, so I get it.
Yeah. Yes, I wanted cake, too.
I can't eat when I get stressed out, so.
Hmm.
Yeah, it depends on my level of stress. I do get like you too, that past a certain point, if I'm super stressed, that, yeah, I can't eat either. My stomach gets too upset.
So I had one weird question about this tracker that Agnes had ingested, and they kind of sort of answered it, but then it sort of seemed like it wasn't answered. You know, when they show her going into a coma and then show that Narek is now no longer able to track her, at first that didn't make sense to me. Like, okay, so does it only work when she has active brain waves, or like, what's going on there? But then they kind of mentioned, I think, that whatever substance it was that Agnes took actually counteracted the chemical, if I'm understanding correctly. But then
that's what I gathered too.
I'm not entirely sure how then later Narek picks them back up, whether he just deduced where they were going or what.
See, I thought he knew where they were going, like from getting Soji to go through her memory. So but yeah, I sort of wondered the same thing, like when they left the Borg transwarp conduit near that planet, of suddenly there was a ship waiting at that entrance to follow them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure either, other than it's how Narek gets to the planet.
Right.
For the upcoming episodes.
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing for him to know where they were ultimately trying to go, but to know, oh, they're going to try and use that Borg conduit, and it you know, starts over here, and how would he have that knowledge? And so that did kind of fall apart a little bit for me. But, you know, I was glad when we did get that little bit of explanation of why the tracker stopped working, when, because I thought it doesn't make sense that it stopped working because she went into a coma, but it does make sense if the chemical she took counteracted it.
Yeah, I didn't understand why she had to chew an isolinear chip, an actual chip, to get that chemical in her body as a tracker. Like, that was a bizarre thing for me to, like, put together, that she's eaten this piece of metal, or what you think is metal, and then this chemical later is what deactivates it in her system.
Well, I got the
I
feeling
thought that was weird.
I thought it was more of a capsule that she had to chew, but to me it was
crunched like a tortilla strip like a tortilla chip when she was having to chew it.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a little weird, and I thought, well, you know, wouldn't a hypo spray just work?
Yeah, but, exactly.
You know. I guess
if it crunched, didn't it sounded like she broke it.
Well,
know?
That
like
that's
if you're
the thing
biting down on it.
Well, see, I thought that it was like a hard capsule that had a chemical tracker. So it was containing a liquid that then got ingested into her body. Like, it wasn't that object that stayed in her body that was the tracker. So, and
well, that would make sense, because then she would just like poop it out.
Yeah, so, exactly.
Yeah.
So that's the gist I got. So it was a chemical. Basically, her body became the tracker. But again, why wouldn't you just inject it? Unless it had to be taken in by the digestive system. But yeah, it seemed a little strange to me. You know, it ends up working for the story. And maybe that's something different where, you know, later we find out that Commodore O is a Jat Vash agent, or at least Tal Shiar. So maybe that's a Romulan thing, as opposed to, you know, doing it more the Starfleet way of a hypo spray.
Oh, that's true. I didn't even think about that.
Because it is then Narek who ends up using the tracking information. So it's probably a Romulan process, something that they've developed.
I literally don't have a whole lot to say about this.
Yeah.
I'll just say my piece here. I think the issue with this show for me is that it's a very heavy drama show.
Mm.
And I've said in the past that Star Trek is the only drama that I've really taken to. And that was only because it had Star Trek stuff in it, like Starfleet and ships and uniforms and crews and hierarchy and command and cool missions and this team spirit and, you know, characters that you could, you know, really wanted to be and be friends with, you know, especially when you were a kid and all of that stuff. And that's what really appealed to me about Star Trek. And that's the only reason that I watched it. And so this show is kind of devoid of a lot of that. And so that's why I'm having a hard time watching, because it's more of just a straight drama with a little bit of Star Trek stuff thrown in here and there. So that's that. I think that's what my primary issue is with it. I just don't like dramas, and that's what I'm getting with this show.
Yeah,
you know, it's just my personal taste. So
yeah, and I would be the same way. You know, a friend of mine keeps telling me, "Oh, you gotta watch Brooklyn Nine-Nine. It's so hilarious," and I'm just like, comedy's not my thing. It doesn't do anything for me. Now, if I saw an episode, would I find things in it funny? Probably. But it's just not what I want to sit down and watch. So, yeah, I mean, everyone's going to have things like that. It's just sad that for you, it's basically taking something that you enjoy and turning it into something you don't enjoy.
Look, I really have enjoyed catching up with the legacy characters. I mean, that's honestly what I care about. The new characters aren't doing anything for me, you know, and so I'm enjoying, obviously, Nepenthe getting to see Riker and Troi and how their lives turned out. I'm glad Picard is back. You know, it was nice to see Hugh, even though he bit the dust. You know, and it's... well, you know, look, I wasn't all that emotionally attached to Hugh. I mean, he's a nice guy. He's a good character, I guess. But he was in two episodes of TNG, so it's not like,
yeah,
you know, I was crying over him dying. But, you know, in Seven of Nine, she's part of the Trek lore, you know, so it's kind of cool to see her back, even though I'm not super familiar with her character. So, yeah, I mean, it's a little disappointing. That it's not more of kind of what, well, I feel like I'm saying the wrong thing here, because I knew it wasn't going to be like Star Trek, because I knew it was going to be set in a very different way. So I don't think I expected it to be like, you know, Star Trek has always been. But I was really open-minded about it going into it, because I thought, well, you know, as civilian life in Star Trek could be cool, you know. But it's really done in the style of like the more modern dramas. If this had been Star Trek back in the 90s, I never would have watched it.
Yeah.
So, because it doesn't have any of the elements that attracted me to Star Trek at all in it. So it's a bit of a disappointment, but at the same time, I'm not like, you know, I'm not mad. I'm not heartbroken, you know. I got my episode with Riker and Troi. I'm going to be happy with that. And hopefully, I know Guinan, and I think LeVar Burton's coming back for season two. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with those characters.
Yeah.
You know, anytime they bring back the legacy characters, I'm down for that. Yeah, it's just not to my personal taste, this show. But there are things I do enjoy about it.
Well, I'm glad you're able to enjoy it, and like, it's equally sad that you're not enjoying it the way I'm enjoying it. So.
Well, you know, I don't like the story, all the story stuff. It's just like I totally zone out on that stuff. It's just not interesting to me. I don't know. I just don't really get caught up in the story stuff. I really like the character stuff. You know, if it's a scene that has a really good character study, which is most of Nepenthe, you know, I really enjoy that type of stuff. But when you start really getting heavy into like plot details, and which is what this show is, like 90% of this show is just plot, you know, and I just,
that's multiple plots. To,
it, oh overall. God. Oh God. Yeah. That makes it way worse for me. So it's just like,
and
I can't keep up.
I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. I know. That's great. That's great. I just can't do it. I just can't do it. So yeah, it is what it is. All right. Well, I guess we'll wrap up the discussion then. We'll be getting to episodes 9 and 10 in a couple of episodes from now. We're going to do something else next time. We're kind of all out of order right now, so I'm not sure exactly what the next thing is going to be. So stay tuned and be surprised. We would like to know from you guys, if Riker was making a pizza for you, what kind of pizza would you go for? I tend to like the Supreme pizzas with kind of everything on it.
Yeah, that's my usual go-to as well. Unless I'm feeling like being a little more picky on my ingredients. A friend of mine introduced me to a variation on the Hawaiian pizza. So instead of ham and pineapple, you get pepperoni and pineapple. And I really quite enjoy that.
Oh man, I've never understood the pineapple thing on pizza.
Yeah, it's one of those things, you're usually either in one camp or the other.
I say for my pizza, like I love just a regular pepperoni pizza. But I also love like a really good Hawaiian pizza as well. So
ooh, another pineapple lover.
Huh? Yeah. Yeah. In fact, the best Hawaiian pizza I've ever had. I was actually able to go to Italy a few years ago and I had one in Venice. That was one of the best pizzas I've ever eaten. And you can go to Italy and get really bad Italian food. I'm just going to say. I've also had terrible pizza in Italy. So to the point that all of us were like, God, this is like worse than like fast food chain pizzas in the States. But I usually, if I'm ordering pizza, I'll usually order a pepperoni pizza with onions. Mm. And that's usually my go-to. So I'm not... there, if I get a Supreme pizza or sharing that with somebody, there's a lot of things I'm picking off of the pizza. So like I won't ever tell someone don't get that. I'll just pick off what I'm not gonna what I don't like. So
which is they had Hawaiian pizza in Italy?
They did, yeah.
Interesting. Yep. I would not think that was invented there though.
It was not.
Probably not. And like pepperoni pizza over there is with peppers. So when you're ordering a pepperoni pizza, you have to specify you want the American pepperoni, which is the meat, versus all different peppers.
Isn't pizza an American invention anyway? Or is that a myth?
I've not figured that one out. It's one of those things where it's like the like real pizza purists, there's... you know, a certain style of pizza and it has to be done exactly this way and only these toppings and stuff. And then that's pizza. And there's this whole movement of it in Italy, in a certain region and everything. I actually watched a TV show on pizza. And they were talking about all that sort of thing, but they never really addressed the whole, is it an American invention? But fun fact, the Hawaiian pizza was actually invented in Canada.
Really?
Yes. So figure that one out. I don't know.
I do like adding actual bacon to my Hawaiian pizza, not just Canadian bacon, but also to add bacon to it because it gives it a smoky taste to it. So. And now I'm hungry for pizza. This is
I know, I was going to say, it's almost dinner time.
Yeah. See, I've already had my supper, so.
Yeah, I did too.
Yeah. I'm out here on the West Coast, so way behind everybody else, so. All right. Well, Aaron, I guess you can tell them where they can write in about their pizza preferences.
Absolutely. You can find us on each of the main social media platforms these days. So we are on Twitter at Tribbles Podcast. We're also on Instagram, Tribbles and Transporters Podcast. And then on Facebook, we have the Tribbles and Transporters page. And then, as always, we have our email, which is just tribblesandtransporters@gmail.com.
Descriptions are in the link. The descriptions are in the link. The links are in the description.
One got there in the end.
Yeah. Just scroll down. You'll see something down there. tap on them and then write your words. So hit send. So you can do that. As always, we appreciate ratings on iTunes and so forth. So I guess that'll do it for Nepenthe. And what's episode 8 called? Broken Pieces. I keep thinking Impossible Box for some reason.
Yeah, that was the previous episode.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So that'll do it. I'm going to stop talking before I screw up again. And we'll see you guys next time.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.